Sunset Lake CBD is a majority employee-owned hemp farm located right outside of Burlington, Vermont. Before they started growing hemp, Sunset Lake Farms produced cream for Ben & Jerry's. Sunset Lake CBD doesn't use any pesticides or herbicides to grow any of its hemp plants, and they use organic fertilizer and other sustainable farming techniques to ensure the long-term health of the soil and to minimize their carbon footprint. So like all of us, my days are really stressful. By the end of the night, my kids are in bed, I'm taking a minute to chill, but I'm still unwinding. I recently started using the Relax Gummies infused with CBD isolate, reishi mushroom extract, and ashwagandha root extract. I'm really glad I tried these because they really helped me get ready for a good night of sleep, and I really think I sleep better, so I'd highly recommend it. So check out Sunset Lake CBD today at sunsetlakecbd.com and use the code HFPOD for 20% off your order. That's sunsetlakecbd.com and use the code HFPOD for 20% off your order. Farmer owned, Vermont grown, Sunset Lake CBD.
Hey everyone, it's Cam Hurt, host of the Best Show Ever podcast, and we have got a second season coming out very soon that I am very excited about. Got some very cool special guests, including musical acts that we all love, like Karina Reichman, Daniel Donato, Jake Brownstein from Eggy, Rick and Peter from Goose, and many more. Tune in for new episodes dropping on Osiris Media March 5th on the Best Show Ever podcast.
Hey, listeners, I want to tell you about a sponsor, Music Masters Collective. They're a nonprofit organization that produces unique music events, providing opportunities for fans and artists to meet and collaborate in an inspired and creative atmosphere. Every week, they host different events, all with the opportunity to learn from world-class musicians like Oteil Burbridge, Trouble No More, former members of The Band, Milk Carton Kids, Nikki Glaspie, Bill Frisell, Sean Colvin, and many more. This June, join the Fab Four, Joan Osborne, John Sebastian, Marshall Crenshaw, and a great group of faculty for the debut of Magical Mystery Camp. This all-inclusive, once-in-a-lifetime music vacation experience in the heart of the Catskills will be packed with nightly performances, workshops, speakers, song circles, open mics, and a lot more. If you're a performing musician at any level, bring your instrument. If you're a music lover, bring your good spirit. It's an amazing experience for individuals, friends, and couples alike. Registration is open, spots are filling up, so check it out soon. And scholarships are available. Check out magicalmysterycamp.com/helpingfriendly to learn more. Hello. This is the Helping Friendly podcast. I'm here. My name's RJ. I'm here to make my co-host laugh, which I almost did that time. Jonathan, Brian, how you guys doing?
Pretty good. Pretty good. Happy Monday or Tuesday or whatever day that everybody hears this.
Happy whatever day it is.
Happy day of the week. How you guys doing?
Good. Guys, we're going to talk about, we're going to go back in time a little bit and talk about a fall tour show that happened in the past. But first, we should say that we have a bunch of cool stuff coming up. And thanks to our partners at Shift Genuine Cannabis for helping us put this show out there. We have a show, a live show coming up this Saturday. If you're going to the San Francisco show at the Chase Center, Brian and I and our friend Benji and a special guest will be set up right outside of the venue entrance at 4 o'clock local time. And we are going to have a live event and we would love to see you there. We'll take questions and would love to meet you and maybe give you some stickers and other things. That's all happening this weekend. Do you guys know why that's happening?
Wait, that's this weekend?
Yeah. Yeah.
I really got to get better at calendars.
And you know why it's happening? It's because Fish is going back on tour starting on Friday in Sacramento, according to the calendar that I've seen. Is that the right one, Brian?
I think I checked the same calendar. I think that they're playing on Friday, and they're playing in Sacramento for, I think this is the first time since 1996, 11/30/96. I may be off by a year or six there, but I think that that's right. And that was, if that is the last time they played in Sacramento, that is an amazing second set that I recommend anyone out there listening to. Peter Applebaum comes up and there's a gorgeous version of Taste and Amazing Grace. So hopefully this tour opener show will be just as quality.
I mean, given how much they've been, how much Trey's been playing, I mean, it's got to be. They're going to come out.
Trey's been lounging around. I mean, he's been on a beach somewhere.
Relaxing on the beach. Yeah. I mean, this is going to be
for like weeks.
It's going to be amazing. Jonathan, do you expect there to be like a couple shows worth of kind of tuning up, or do you think they're going to come out firing?
No, I expect they'll tune up before they get on stage, you know, where the technicians will do it for like the pianos or whatever. And then they'll come
Dad
out.
Jokes.
And, yeah. I think they're probably going to hit the ground running more or less. So I'm excited to hear what is to come.
Yeah, we try not to go into this with expectations, right? But my expectation of summer was that there was going to be a lot of tuning up, and there was relatively little tuning up. So I think I'd be surprised if they took a step back and decided to kind of like toy around with a few things for a couple of shows before figuring out where they were going. But I think none of us have any idea about what Halloween impacts where they're going to play or what they're going to play and how they're going to sound. So that may affect the sound in a way that we can't really predict right now. But kind of to your point, Jonathan, based on summer, based on the Tab tour, I think it would be fair to assume that we'll hear some really good music out the gates.
Do you think they don't have to tune up because Trey now has that snark tuner on his headstock full time, so he's always tuned up? Sorry.
I've never seen him tune on stage aside from Pebbles and Marbles, so I just assume that his guitar comes fully tuned.
I'll stop.
Just to wrap up what I was saying, Saturday afternoon, 4:00 local time, come find us outside of the venue. We'll send out more information about it in the meantime.
This is our
we'll have a conversation. This is it. Yeah, exactly. And then we have two other events. We have on the 30th of October at the Brooklyn Bowl in Las Vegas, we will be doing a live recording at 1:00 local time. And then on the 31st, we'll be doing the same thing. So we have three live shows coming up, Vegas and San Francisco. So if you guys are at those shows, come find us and say hi.
I will not be spoiling, I think, two out of three of those with dad jokes. So
I
get
think
a variety of options.
We'll call you in. We'll call you in for that. So, guys, we've talked a lot about 2021 Fish, and we've talked a lot about 2021 Tab, actually. We've talked a lot about the music that's happening now. And, Jonathan, you suggested that maybe we go back to this show that I believe you may have attended.
I did not attend this
show. Ah, shit. Well, you should have.
I should have, actually. My good friend Joel did, and he came back with his head rearranged. So there's that. But I attended my first show 19 days earlier.
Okay, right. So, yeah. Which we've talked about on this podcast in the past.
Yes.
We did. Jonathan, tell us the show that we're discussing, can you? Can you do that?
Yeah, it's October 27th, 1994, University Hall at the University of Virginia in Charlottesville, Virginia. This is a great one and a great tour. I think people probably know it, and if you don't, why not? You will after this. How about that,
Brian, we threw around a bunch of fall tour years and shows. I mean, there's hundreds and hundreds to choose from. What do you think about the fall 94 and how this fits in after you kind of went back and re-listened to it before we kind of get into the specifics of the show?
I think fall 94 is, I mean, there's a lot of superlatives you could throw at it, especially post Halloween. But I think that you hear the band, especially in October, kind of hanging out in what had gotten them to this point in time, thinking of like 1992 and 1993, where they would kind of dip their toes into experimentation within the show, but the show itself was still a highly structured event in a lot of cases. You would get usually a Fishman song, you'd get some bluegrass, you'd get either a tweezer or a mic, you'd get a hood or a You Enjoy Myself. This show starts to feel like the band is breaking from that. And this run up to Halloween, Boone, Charlottesville and Spartanburg all in particular feel like the band is starting to figure out what can we do structurally within a show to break out of kind of the confines of whatever we've done over the last few years, which all of which has been fantastic. And it almost feels as though they're going to enter Glens Falls, play the White Album, walk out of there a completely different band, having accomplished something that they probably never even considered possible 11 years earlier. And two nights later, they're going to play a massive 30-minute version of Tweezer that's going to lead to this huge phase of experimentation over the next 8 to 12 months, if you know, depending on where you want to kind of end that experimentation, probably December 31st, 1995. So all that said, like, this feels like we are just about to step through that door, but we're still in a really pure and fascinating era of Phish. What say you guys?
I think that's pretty well covered. I mean, yeah, they're really teetering on the precipice here. You know, it's they've got the material, they've got the chops, they've got the will, and they just have to step through, you know. It's nice, though, you know, in this era we get a lot of, and in this show we get a lot of Gamehenge songs, we get narrations, we get jams, but as you say, they're not the massive Tweezer yet. But yeah, I mean, this band is, they're on fire. They're playing really strong. RJ, do you like this show?
Yeah, it was fun to go back to. This would be a good candidate for an official release, you know, if there's any Fall 94 options out there. It also reminded me that this was kind of the last tour where they really were playing college theaters and venues like this, right? Like, starting summer 95, it was like totally changed. So I don't know. There was definitely something happening with the audience as well. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, they played some college halls and stuff after this, but it was like Penn State, you know, it was the big ones.
Yeah.
And
it's also interesting that structurally on the tour, if you look at where they're at right now, they're coming up the East Coast and they are about to play Glens Falls to close out the month, and then they'll do a few shows in Maine, Massachusetts, New York, Ohio, Pennsylvania. But from there, starting on the 14th of November, this whole tour moves out west. And I wonder, in a sense, you know, if you think about the difference between Fall 94 and Fall 95, Fall 94 starts on the East Coast. They really kind of ramp up on the East Coast before moving out west to unfamiliar crowds, into a place where they're now going to play these kind of wide open, expansive jams that have nothing to do in a lot of ways with what had been successfully, what had successfully gotten them to where they are today. Whereas a year later, they're going to start out west. They're going to play kind of some jamming, but, like, you know, overall, a lot of the October 95 shows tend to toe the line in the way that October 94 shows did. But then they're going to come back home, and they're going to spend basically a month touring around the Northeast and playing some of their highest quality music ever. And so I think, in a sense, of this fall as being, how do we step out? How do we get out of our comfort zone before this, like, grand return that will happen a year later?
This is a pretty cool time. This is, I think, maybe the peak of my tape collecting experience too, at least in memory. Like, this is when I was getting, like, a lot of these shows, you know, a month or two after they were happening probably. And it brings back a lot of good memories of this year. Jonathan, do you want to tell us about some of your highlights from the first set?
Well, there's the whole thing to begin with. No, you know, I do really love every bit of it, though, I will say. But I will get into some of the details. Like, Wilson Without the Chant opens the show. Sparkle is, you know, rapid and tasty. And Maze, like, this would be my first real stopping point. This is exactly what Maze ought to be. Like, it's, you know, what, 9 minutes long, and it's just boom, in your face, like, completely potentially disorientating and, you know, madness sort of music. And I love it. I love it. It just goes all over. What do you guys think about it?
It's really, like, I don't know, after listening to a lot of 2021 Phish, like, this Maze is just, man, it's so intense, so fast. the whole, everything they play is just so fast. There's just, like, a lot of really fast playing. Like, if you listen to it on re-listen or Phish Tracks or one of those things, which I guess is the only way to listen, it sounds kind of like it's sped up a little bit. Like even the intro in Tweezer, which we'll talk about, like it was like, wow, is this recording like sped up a little bit? But man, it just everything's so fast and furious.
They just play fast. It's kind of great.
Yeah, I love how this show starts with Wilson Sparkle Maze in a sense that like it feels rooted in the early 90s. I was just looking through the set list here. I don't know how representative this was of the month, but there's not a single Hoist song in the first set, but there are four Rift songs. And it feels in a sense like they're really comfortable with these songs. They don't feel any need compared to 6 months earlier to promote an album. They're just playing shows again. And so you're getting these really cool combinations of songs that just work in the setting. Wilson, Sparkle, two huge, you know, bursts of energy. And then Maze, kind of your first sense of not really jamming, but like, you know, just kind of playing around each other and figuring out, you know, exactly how, just kind of how each guy is feeling that evening. And you get this just like absolute raucous peak out of Maze that like 20 minutes into the show, you're just like at a high already. And then you go into Forbin's Mockingbird, Vibrational Life, and you get this just like very nostalgic, classic Nectar's era Fish right there.
Jonathan, I mentioned earlier about how this was their last foray playing these kind of university tours. But I think this venue, which I think has been since knocked down, was like an 8,500 seat venue. So not a small university venue. Like it's actually a pretty big crowd. I don't know if for that time that was about what they were hitting or if this was particularly big for that tour. But now that I look at that, I mean, that's a pretty big crowd for Fish in 94.
Yeah. Wish I could remember what I learned about it after the fact, like, you know, how crowded it was.
Yeah.
Probably could have gone down and picked up a ticket and really should have, but what are you going to do? I want to talk about this Forbin Mockingbird, or mostly the Vibration of Life. I love Trey's talking about the phase switch on his guitar as being able to reverse the phase.
Yeah.
And send us hurtling into Gamehenge and all of that. It's just so fun. It's just so fun. I love it. This is the stuff that convinced me that this was a band for me. Even though we don't really get this stuff anymore, it's still a band for me, but this is how I knew I could connect with these people.
Yeah. 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 It's the right mix of like weird and amazing playing and just like bizarre shit happening, but also just grounding in these like really well played songs. So, yeah, I think that was when I mentioned earlier, just collecting tapes. It's like that's what I was learning. Was like, yeah, this band is pretty cool for all those reasons.
Well, I wanted to just pause really quick and just like agree with you because I love the Vibration of Life so much. My first tape was recorded, I think, like 3 weeks after this, 11/17/94. And at the time, all I had was the first set on tape. Never heard the second set until the re-listen app came along. But it has a Forbin's Vibrational Life Mockingbird in it. And I remember hearing the tape. And I kind of, as I'm saying this, like, I feel like I would advocate that if you're going to give anyone a first tape, it doesn't matter what show it is, just give it to them fall 94. It's like you said, RJ, there's like a perfect mix of weirdness of a rock band that's trying to play in an arena. So there's like a ton of energy and there's always great song selections as a result. And they just had a really good rotation. But I didn't know it was possible to hold an audience attention with kind of fantasy narration in the middle of a rock show until I heard Fish and until I heard The Vibration of Life, and hearing it in here and having it go into Divided Sky the way that it does, it just, you're immediately, if you're intrigued in any way, you're basically forced to dive down the rabbit hole of Gamehenge, and it opens up a door that, you know, will lead to where we all are right now. We're talking about Fish on a podcast 20 years later.
So what I want to talk about is everything that you see in here is a vibration of some sort. And so sound is a vibration that's coming out at you. Electricity is a vibration, which is running our whole sound system here. Sound is a vibration. My strings are vibrating. The speaker cones are vibrating. The air is vibrating. Your eardrums are vibrating. And you're hearing the music. So if you keep going up the frequency spectrum and getting higher and higher frequencies of vibration, you get light. And light is a vibration. Well, of course, some people think it's particles, but it's all vibrations. And some people theorize that there's a certain vibration that is the glue that holds the whole universe together. We like to think of it sort of as the vibration of life. So we're going to start this whole thing out right here by getting the vibration of life going. This is supposed to be 7 beats per second. And this should make you feel charged and energetic, in tune with the universe. Here it comes, start things off with the vibration of life.
Had you never heard Spinal Tap's Stonehenge?
I had not at the time, no.
Yeah, no, you're right, though. It is an impressive feat, and, you know, it's one thing to do story time at Nectar's, and it's another thing to be in an 8,500-seat venue, even if it's not sold out, and we don't know what the attendance was here, but it's a challenge, I would think, to be delivering something so esoteric, so yeah, quirky, so weird. But they had just done this maze, and if you're uninitiated, let's be honest, if you don't know, if you've gone to this show without knowing what they're going to do, and you hear this maze, you're either, maybe you'll hate it, but you're very possibly going to think they were jamming or something, because it's so intense. So you're going to probably be somewhat impressed. Then they do this Colonel Forbin song, which is weird. It's got very strange, like, rhythmic sensibilities, and the lyrics don't make a lot of sense unless you know the story. And then he tells a story. And then this beautiful music of Mockingbird. Just, oh, come on. And then, as I asked earlier, then Divided Sky. What'd you guys think of that one?
Really pretty amazing version. Very, very powerful. And just like, yeah, I mean, amazing. Really representative of the time, I think. And probably the excitement of building up to toward the Halloween show was, I don't know, they seemed very well practiced, and I assume that's by having to learn the White Album front to back, but also just, that's just where they were at the time. So I don't know, this is a great representation of where they were.
Standard great, perhaps?
Maybe.
It's not a knock. You know,
maybe.
It's yeah, a good one.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I tend to prefer Fall 94, Divided Skies, just the way the band sounds at the time. There's not really any moments where they're going to branch out and try to bring in, you know, any sort of like key modulations. It's really just like as straightforward as you could possibly hope for with Divided Sky, but they're so on as a unit. I mean, at this point in time, they've played probably 100 shows this year, something like that. You know, they put out an album. Yep. They play all these shows in the spring and the summer. They take a reasonable break from mid-July to early October. But during that time, they're probably rehearsing and learning the White Album while also starting to write new songs that would ultimately become Billy Breed's. Like, this is just the time in Fish's career where everything they did was Fish. And so a song like Divided Sky, I don't think it's ever sounded better, even though I love what they were doing with it throughout 95, 96, 97. Like, this is, to me, the pure sound of this song.
We'll be right back. Perfect. That's the thing. People, you know, yes, there's probably a missed note somewhere in this show and maybe even in this divided sky, but really.
Nope.
This is it.
If you look at the set list on Fishnet, you will see all of the flubs mentioned in comments and notations. So don't worry. They were there and they were documented. So the second set, okay, so the first set is you know, standard fare, I think, for the end. The horse, silent, poor heart, cavern, great. And now a word from our friends at Shift Genuine Cannabis.
What is a city without its music?
The legacy of the New York Philharmonic
is incredible. Nearly two centuries of history. That's a lot of music and a lot of stories.
I was sitting on stage for the very first time thinking, I can't quite believe this is happening.
Join me, Jamie Bernstein, as we explore the history of the New York Philharmonic. It's the NY Phil story made in New York, a podcast about a city, its people, and their orchestra. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
Great show. Go back to it. But
ripping.
We have to talk about the second set. At least we have to talk about the tweezer, but maybe everything, especially getting into the encore. But this tweezer is it's an interesting little journey of a tweezer.
But you're getting ahead of us. Because I just want to note, first of all, we get Julius here. We were looking for the voiced songs, right? But the Yamar, which is fine and good, but it has the Mike, I think it's Mike, doing the weird Rasta shout chant thing that they don't do anymore, which is probably for the best.
Yeah. That's true.
And in these modern times. But it is interesting to hear, and it's pretty cool. It's a good performance.
And that leads into Mike going, like, on the lyrics, the vocal part of Tweezer going crazy with his screaming. They're like they're certainly excited to play it. And then Jonathan, I definitely had this tape at some point, but I had forgotten about that, like, few minutes of just beautiful bliss in the middle of that tweezer, which is really cool. It seemed kind of like they found it and then they kind of went out of it pretty quickly, but that's a pretty awesome little segment.
Yeah, this tweezer, it's funny, it's short, like, by maybe modern standards or whatever, or average length, perhaps. You know, it's 12 minutes, it kind of rips, it's got that bit you described, and then they're done. I think nowadays, if somebody saw that, they'd be like, eh, yeah, a throwaway tweezer. But they'd be wrong, because every moment of this is edge of your seat, kind of great. Do you have a different opinion?
I don't know. I mean, I think it's interesting to me at the time. I think we're all just, this is bad podcasting because we're all in agreement over how great this show is. It's just, you know, no.
You know,
but
what? I changed my mind. It's awful.
Okay, I'll defend it now. No, I guess the one, you know, thought I had when I listened to it is I really wonder, I think that this is the last tweezer that's played before the banger version. And I really wonder kind of what's going through the band's head at this time when 5 days later they're going to come out and use this in the way that the song kind of seems obvious to us now, where the song part ends, if you want to call it a song. I kind of think of Tweezer as like the dumbest song that's ever been written and also one of the greatest songs that's ever been written. It's a riff and a couple of lines, and it's really only there for jamming purposes in a lot of ways. But at this time, if you look back over the previous 2 years, let's call it spring 92 as a starting point, Tweezer serves its purpose as the one moment of true improvisation in any show that it's played. But in every show it's played, it caps off maybe 12 to 14 minutes. And sometimes you'll get a fade into like a Life Boy. Sometimes you'll get a little bit of an extended jamming. You go into the previous summer, summer 94, you've got that great version from UIC. But it's just interesting to me to think of this version that's played, and they're going to have some 12, 10, 13-minute versions to come over the next few months. But the vast majority of tweezers that are going to be played between now and the end of summer tour 1995 are like 25 to 50 minutes in length and just allow the band to go into open improvisation that they'd never been to before. So like, I almost think of this as like a goodbye to the tweezers of the previous few years, where it served a purpose structurally, doesn't get to where it's going to ultimately go, but like where it's going to ultimately go is this like total game-changing moment for the band's career.
That's an interesting way to look at it. And the Bangor version, which obviously is from a live one, that's, yeah, just a few days after. And probably if there was a multi-night Halloween run, you know, that would have been the, now we've done the really complicated thing. Now let's just like have fun and start going out there, you know, which is pretty cool. Jonathan, what this set was cut short, and then the encore is worth discussing, but what else from this second set? Contact, Big Black Furry Creature, Down with Disease, Sweet Adeline, all fine.
Hang on. Yeah. All of that. No, Contact's cool. Big Black Furry Creatures, I'm a big fan. I want Fish to inject madness into my life, into my night, into my musical catalog, and herein they do that effectively. It's not the most bizarre version of Big Black Furry Creatures, in that all of them are at least a little bit. But it's cool. And then Down with Disease is hot and intense. Like, I went back and listened to it again, looking for, I don't know, signs of them like leaking out of the song. And they don't really do that, but they just shred, you know, like an 8.5 minute Down with Disease. And turns out that's really fun. And yeah, then they do Sweet Adeline, and probably would have come out and, you know, done something else. But according to the notes, and Brian and I were talking about this top of the thing before we started recording, it's the set is cut short. This set is like 49 minutes long on tape. Because I guess there was a miscommunication with somebody at the venue staff, according to what we have on Fishnet. They thought it was time to end. But worth noting also, there are a couple other shows this month that are shorter. So, you know, it's not crazy short.
I've noticed that, but it's, yeah, with 94 shows, I don't know why it's this case, but like, if you listen to 1992 and 1993, you're pretty much guaranteed somewhere between 22 and 26 songs a night. And each set reaches around 90 minutes, and there's no real break within each set for improvisation. You start to see this trend in 94 where the sets start to get a little bit shorter, and what it leads to ultimately is kind of, and this is just, you know, kind of observing it, like you start to see the band open up and expand a little bit more and not feel the need to play so many songs and not feel the need to play a Fishman song every single night or a bluegrass song in this slot. Or sometimes they don't even need to have a ballad. Like, the closest thing to a ballad in this second set is Yamar and Contact, which we wouldn't really consider. Those aren't really, they're kind of slower tempos, but yeah, it sounds like there was a issue with the staff, but it led to kind of one of those cool moments where the encore is just remarkable and one of the most listenable encores the band has ever played.
I like that. Most listenable encore.
Well, you sometimes just get, they come out, they play one song, they go away, and you know, you can hear it. But like, this is like a, this feels like a mini set. It feels like a statement in some cases.
Yeah. What do you think about it, RJ?
Yeah. I mean, according to the Fishnet, just the jam chart notation, if you haven't heard this, you haven't heard the sickest version of this song in Fish history. That is a bold statement.
It's a bold statement. It's definitely the longest version of this one particular song, but let's take it from the top, though, right? Slave. Everybody likes Slave, right?
Slave can sometimes just be like a standalone encore, so you would think at this point in time that they're coming out and they're just playing it.
However, I just want to make everybody wait. A little pregnant pause is important, particularly when we're talking about this one song, this next song.
There's a song about a man.
Yeah, and this guy, he, you know, had some knowledge. And Trey tells us about the knowledge in the song.
Yes.
How does he obtain the knowledge?
Well, you know, it's as many people do pre-internet from a book.
And does he, is it an audio book?
No, no, it's a book. You know, it was written by the man.
The man.
Yeah, and it was handed down. And then the song was written about this man, this great and knowledgeable man.
Sounds like a good biography.
Yeah. This. I wonder if anyone's caught on to the shtick yet, Jonathan, do you think? Should we keep it going for a while?
I don't know. We could probably. It's a good thing I can cut it down a little bit. And,
just a little.
Just a maybe. I don't know. We'll see.
I've always wanted to do that bit with a microphone in front of me, so I appreciate it. We haven't even finished the bit, so just keep it going.
The song you know, that comes out of Slave to the Traffic Light, the next song in the encore, the three-song encore, is of course. Ridiculous. And it's a cool one. It's a cool
one.
Thank
you. Trey, you know, thank you for that.
Gets a little talk.
Thank you for that, Jonathan.
Points back to, you know, the vibration of life. A little callback to that in there, and it's cool. And they play the little, you know, play the little bit and wrap it up, and you're like, well, that's a weird way to end a show. So they don't. Instead, they play Tweezer reprise, of course, right? Because they played Tweezer, so we got to reprise it.
Yeah.
This one's special, though.
This one is. I mean, I feel like Tweezer Reprise is one of those songs that I was at the Hartford version in 2010 where they played back-to-back Tweezer Reprises, and then they would open the following show and close that show with Tweezer Reprise. I feel like it's one of those songs that you can point to 4398 where they just play it out of nowhere and then open the following night with Tweezer. Tweezer Reprise is one of those songs that like is such a Fish in joke. And I wonder, and I don't know this. I was not at Fish shows in 1994. You two would know this better than I would. Was it as celebrated at this point in time, or was it just felt like it was tacked on to the end of a show because they played Tweezer? Like how has that song evolved?
It was fun, and honestly, I'm not sure in 94, I didn't see a Tweezer in 94, but I mean, I think it was expected.
Right.
But this one was, you know.
This one has a little bit extra to it.
Didn't expect any mustard, you know.
Yeah.
It was like the next year, I saw like standalone Tweezer reprise with no Tweezer, you know, and things got weirder, but at this point, they just, yeah, they started goosing it up and they get really long.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's, I guess it's just interesting because, you know, you think about 1984 Phish and where these songs are developing. Like you were talking about Down With Disease earlier. Like Down With Disease is about to have a version played 2 weeks from now in Ohio, Kent, Ohio, I believe, that's going to kind of push the boundaries of the song, going to have Mercy, go back in a Down With Disease. The following year, we're going to see two 25-plus minute versions, one of the greatest Type 1 versions that has ever been played on December 1st, 1995. Moving into 96, 97, it's going to become like the next incarnation of Tweezer. Like, I say that because like all these songs at this point in Phish's career, like they're almost figuring out what are the songs that we need to bring with us. And a lot of songs are going to start falling out of the rotation and are going to be heard of maybe 25, 30 times between then and now. You know, set lists are going to shrink, new songs are going to come in, more jamming is going to be introduced. And, you know, a song, like it almost feels to me like when they're playing certain songs here, I don't think this is intentional at the time, but it's just happening as a result of circumstance. Certain songs are going to rise to the fore and they will continue with the band and certain songs won't. And obviously, you know, Tweezer Reprise, we think of it now as a song that's just going to remain as a capstone on a show because they played Tweezer. But there's an alternate universe where they just decided to like, okay, that was fun. We used to do that, but there's no reason to continue doing it. But you play a version like this, and it almost seems to me like it clicks with the band. Like, wow, this song is not just an addendum to the Tweezer that we played. Like, this is a really, really, really fun song that we can figure out ways to screw around with where it's set listed, or like we can cap off a show in this really bombastic way.
So Tweezer Reprise actually serves a purpose. And I think maybe I've talked about it on the podcast before, but when they play Tweezer, they are opening the door. They're letting us into the freezer. They're exposing the universe to this energy.
Totally.
And it remains open until they play the reprise and close that door.
It's a fair point.
So
structurally important.
It puts all of us at risk not to finish it at some point.
Fair. But it's a good risk. I get it.
It's a risk I'm willing to take.
It's a, but it's
this one that they play it. It seems normal, but then they just kind of keep juicing it, keep going a little bit more, and just kind of an extended, drawn out finish because they just like don't want to quit. But their momentum from the second set is over. You know, and I guess they're like, I guess that's it. And, you know, you feel like they want more. And by the way, if you want more, just go to the next show, because that Spartansburg show from the next night.
Two nights later, 10:29.
You're right. It's.
But both.
Sorry, I was looking at Charleston. Both of those. Yeah, 10:28 has like the crazy good David Bowie Manteca. And then the 10:29, yes, it has just the... You know, has sparks. It just has sparks. Let's just say it has sparks.
It has sparks.
It also has an antelope, sleeping monkey antelope, great melt, all those things. It's just, they are so wound up and they're playing great. They're playing just super great. And it just they can't keep it in when they're just playing their 2 minute song. So it stretches out to it the longest version ever.
Yeah, no, you're right. And, you know, I think, I don't know. I just keep coming back to like this crux of where they're at in their career. And these four shows that lead up to Halloween, the Boone, Charlottesville, Charleston, and Spartanburg. I would love to be a fly on the wall and go back to see what both the band and the fan base were like during those four shows, because to this point in time, they've played multiple tours. They've had big shows before, you know, we're a year and change removed from the biggest attended show that they've ever played at Great Woods. We're close to a year from this really historic and monumental New Year's Eve run in Worcester and Portland, as well as other East Coast cities. They've played Amy's Farm. They've played open for Santana. They've played their Colorado shows. Like, Phish has made memorable historic moments leading up to this point. It's why people in Fall 94 are following the band around. It's why Trey says, for all those of you who were in Boone last night, like, people start cheering, because there's a lot of people that drove from Boone to see them. They have a dedicated fan base, but they're about to play a show that is going to go down as probably one of their best 5 to 10 shows that they've ever played and ever will play. It's a huge achievement from a musical standpoint, from an artistic standpoint. And the first and third sets outside of the White Album absolutely kick ass. Like, it's some of the best performances you could ever hear of some of the best Phish songs ever written. And it goes on until like, what, 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. I mean, it's just, it's insane. And it's going to
4 hours of music.
It's 4 hours of music.
It's crazy.
And like, you could, I don't know. And then they're going to come out of that and they're going to sound like a completely new band for the next 8 weeks. Like, I just think of these shows leading up to it as such a, I'm a big proponent of, you know, there's no such thing as like the singular show that changes everything. There's a lot of little bits that lead up to those big shows, but you'd have a hard time finding four shows that lead up to a bigger moment at this point in Phish's career, you know, pre-1995 than this, where it's just like energy and excitement and the band is firing on all cylinders. And in some cases you can hear all of that in this Tweezer reprise, just like, let's let it go and let's just see what happens. And magic comes out of it.
I think now at this point, we've talked about the whole show. You've actually given us some really great context, and that was awesome. I think we should just take a minute and recognize that one of the reasons we picked this show is because of its placement as the lead into Halloween. As we go into our short 2-week fall tour in 2021, leading right into Halloween, will we get a Tweezer reprise to match this one? I don't know. But hopefully we'll get some interesting stuff, high energy from the band, because they're excited about what they're doing, what's to come, and I know we all will be.
We are, and I want to ask you to play a losing man's game. Do you have any thoughts, any ideas, any wishes for Halloween?
Actually, okay, so no, but yes. I have no serious guesses about what Phish is going to play. So I will start with that. Mm-hmm. I have for years, and surely on this podcast in the past, said I would like to hear them play Goodbye Yellow Brick Road, if only side one, because that would be amazing. Funeral for a Friend and A Love Lies Bleeding would just be phenomenal. And, you know, they could just cover that on one of the other nights. That would be cool, just that pairing. But I was listening a couple weeks ago, 2 weeks ago, we were making some beer, bottling some beer, actually, and was listening to Tumbleweed Connection, and Amarina's on that, Burn Down the Mission, and I'm not the massive Elton John fan, despite the fact that I've just dropped two of the albums in my list here, but I think that would be amazing. And or the band's Brown album, which is the thing I put on right after Tumbleweed Connection that night, because I was just going for the big stuff. So that's kind of the things I'd like to hear them do Across the Great Divide, you know, or Lookout Cleveland again and stuff like that. But maybe they could, you know, really nail it this time. What about you, Brian? Do you have any, you want to put some money on the table?
I don't. I learned that the last time I was in Vegas. Just hang out, just to keep your money. I kind of share. So I was thinking about this though, because obviously part of the reason that we are talking about a singular show that happened almost 30 years ago, 27 years ago,
27 years ago,
is that we think about this band a lot. You know, I think that they have pushed the envelope of the new album cover for Halloween as far as it will go. I don't know how much further that they would go than inventing a band that created an album on an ice field in Greenland. However, walking into Vegas 2018, I had no idea that they even had that creativity up their sleeve. So they're probably going to surprise us in that sort of manner. I think my wish would be for either like a classic rock album, like you're talking about, kind of in the realm of Bowie's Ziggy Stardust, where obviously that was a tribute in a lot of cases to Bowie, but it was also like, don't you kind of just want to hear Fish play a classic rock album for 90 minutes? Like, what's that? That's a great thing. I was thinking if there's a way for them to kind of combine what they have been doing recently with the original intention of these cover albums, it would be very cool to hear them play something from the 21st century. I don't have a good guess of what that would be. You know, there were original thoughts that they were going to play Kid A back in 2009. But I think it would be really cool to hear them interpret something that's a little bit more modern, maybe a little bit more challenging from a listener standpoint. Either that, or you mentioned the band's The Brown Album. There were a lot of rumors going around. I think Trey mentioned this in Rolling Stone in summer 2003, maybe at some point in 2003, that they were considering doing a Halloween show that year. And if they did it, they were going to do The Basement Tapes. And that is a total dream album for me. I would love to hear them reinvent their sound around that sort of, you know, that sort of Americana sound. I would love to hear that impact that had on them. So I think that would be like the dream album for me. I would freak out about every single one of those songs. I would have intense jealousy for my wife, who will be in the room while I'm at home hanging out with the kids, in the best way possible. But yeah, I guess like when it comes down to it, there are so many new songs to put in the rotation right now that writing a new album to fit in 10 to 12 new songs seems like a lot at this point in time. But I loved Kaz Vote Vox, and I loved Chilling Thrilling. I loved the wingsuit concept. I loved the way that they challenge their fans in that way. Like, I'm happy with whatever they do, while kind of thinking at this point in time, throwing out a new cover album could be a really cool way to celebrate where they're at right now.
Obviously, you know, I cited the band, The Basement Tapes would be phenomenal. I mean, the material in that is so good. It's so varied.
Yeah.
It's, you know, from some of my favorite players of all time. I don't know. I mean, I'll be there. I don't know what they're going to play. I don't care what they play. They could just come out and just play a 3-set show and not do a costume, and I would be okay with it, mm-hmm. honestly. I know somebody would complain, but I think
lots
they charge more
complain.
For the ticket for that night. So they're planning to do something, and I'm sure it'll be great, and I can't wait. Plus, we get all this other music that's coming up before it. So, you know, there's a lot of cool ass stuff to come.
Yeah, we've got a whole West Coast run that should be really fantastic. Fish in October in California and in the Southwest. I had been wanting all year to make this trip happen for myself. I'm going to make it happen. I'm going to San Francisco. I'm going to Phoenix, Chula Vista, and LA. And then I'm going to fly home. My wife is going to fly out, go see the Vegas shows. So collectively, we'll be together seeing a lot of this tour. I'm really happy that she gets 4 shows solo, gets away from the kids for about half a week. I'm really happy that I'll get to kind of do Halloween with the kids and get that experience. But also, I wanted to do a drive across the desert, see a bunch of Fish shows in kind of unnamed places where Fish doesn't really play that often. And when they do, the show results are mixed. I'm excited to see kind of what that vibe on this tour leading up to Halloween has for Fish. I feel like I could be walking into either a couple really classic shows or just having an awesome solo road trip across the Southwest.
Maybe both.
Potentially both.
Here's hoping. Here's hoping for both.
I'm happy with whatever. It's just awesome.
Yeah. Safe travels as you head out to San Francisco and represent the team in the live event. Should we recap those real quick? There's going to be one at 4 p.m. on Saturday in San Francisco, right outside the venue. You and RJ and Benji and a special guest.
Special guest. Yes.
All right. And then we'll be doing two more in Vegas at Brooklyn Bowl on the 30th and the 31st. We'll have more details and all that stuff. And I think I'll be at the 31st one. Got plans on the 30th, though. Sorry. But hey, what are you going to do? We should thank our sponsors again, too, probably, right? Shift Genuine Cannabis, who have been there for us, keeping HF Pod on tour.
We are very grateful for Shift. It's the only reason that you and I got to hang out at one point this year. And who knows? Maybe they'll be the only reason that we'll be able to hang out next year. Who knows? But at some point, we're going to be able to catch our second fish show together.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. In the meantime, I guess that'll do it for us today. So, till next time.
Enjoy fall tour, everyone.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to us talking about our podcast for a minute.
What's the name of that podcast?
That's Axe to Grind. And right now you're going to be getting a little taste of it, right down to the shaky microphone and all.
And my name's Bob.
And my name's Patrick. And usually we're joined by Tom.
Tom's the best. Tom has a real grown-up job that requires him to be at work. But we talk about decidedly not so grown-up things like
hardcore music and things that people that like hardcore music tend to like.
So that could be the latest shows, revisiting classic material, talking about the new classics, all the little dorm room nonsense that you imagine from a niche music podcast that you either love, want to love, or hate.
Yeah, imagine all the emotions that you have towards a genre that has impacted your life. And then condense them down to an hour to 2 hours a week.
So triangulate your speakers. Think about jumping off the bed, singing along, dancing like an idiot, and listen to Axe to Grind podcast.